We tend to focus on what's put on our plates at a restaurant, but usually don't have a clue as to how the workers in the back of the house are treated. In a new book called Behind the Kitchen Door, Saru Jayaraman, the co-founder and co-director of the Restaurant Opportunity Center, reports on the abusive and unfair conditions faced by many of the 10 million people who are the backbone of the country's second largest private sector workforce. It's published by ILR Press, an imprint of Cornell University Press, and I'm very pleased to welcome Saru Jayaraman to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Eric Schlosser, the author of Fast Food Nation, says in his foreword to your book that too many of our meals are now brought to our table by the misery of others. So you're talking about the people who do the prep work, wash the dishes, bus the tables, people who are mostly immigrants?
They're everybody, actually. As you said, this is the nation's second largest private employer, and it's over 10 million workers, and it includes everybody, all positions from wait staff and bartending all the way back to dishwashers. And it includes people of all races, of all ethnic backgrounds, young and old, white, black, immigrant from all over the world, but overwhelmingly poor. So although it's the nation's second largest employer, over 10 million workers, in fact, 1 in 10 Americans works in the restaurant industry, it also happens to be the employer of 7 of the 11 lowest paying jobs in America, and the 2 absolute lowest paying jobs in America, lower than every other kind of occupation, are restaurant jobs. And so basically you've got the largest and fastest growing sector of the economy proliferating the lowest paying jobs, and it's literally every type of worker, every race. You know, it is one of the mainstays of our economy. Everybody's entering it, and it's providing literally the worst jobs.
Now, what are the lowest paying jobs? Are they covered at least by minimum wage laws?
Well, that's the key source of the problem is even when they, you know, these are definitely all minimum wage jobs. In fact, the restaurant industry is the largest employer of minimum wage jobs. But the restaurant industry is also the industry that, frankly, sets the minimum wage. So the National Restaurant Association, which is the industry lobby, has been named the 10th most powerful lobbying group in Congress and has actively lobbied against raising the minimum wage for all workers and certainly for tipped workers. The minimum wage for tipped workers has been stuck at $2.13 an hour for the last 22 years. And so we actually aren't just talking about dishwashers and kitchen workers and bussers. We are actually also talking about servers. In a city like New York, you may think of servers as, you know, people who earn a lot of tips, maybe the guy who serves you at the fancy steakhouse. But in fact, the vast majority of servers in America are women. 70% are women who work in Applebee's and IHOP and the Olive Garden and Red Lobster and earn literally some of the poorest wages in America. In fact, servers suffer from 3 times the poverty rate of the rest of the U.S. workforce and use food stamps at double the rate of the rest of the U.S. workforce, which means the people who put food on our tables can't afford to eat themselves. And it's because this industry isn't just, you know, following the law, isn't just paying the minimum wage. They literally lobby. They pay millions of dollars each year to Congress members to basically keep the minimum wage at $2.13 an hour for tipped workers and $7.25 for everybody else. And it's slightly better in New York. Actually, we were part of my organization, the Restaurant Opportunity Center. We were part of raising the minimum wage for tipped workers in New York State. It's now closer to $5 in New York State. But enough is enough. You know, $2.13 at the federal level, $5 in New York State. These are not wages that people can rely on. And I think most people don't realize that when you tip these workers, your tip is actually paying the majority of this worker's wage. That's how they make their living, is by your tip. It's not something on top of a wage, which I think is what most of us assume.
But there also have been,
likes it that way.
There have been some scandals where some restaurants have been accused of taking a piece of the tips.
That's absolutely right. And we've been a part of many campaigns to get companies to stop taking a portion of the workers' tips. In fact, our data shows that 1 in 5 workers suffers from some form of tip theft, and more like 1 in 2 suffers from some form of wage theft. You know, either they're not earning all of their hours or they're not making overtime. These are pervasive problems, to be sure, but we feel pretty strongly that were the minimum wage to be raised, both for tipped workers and non-tipped workers, you could eliminate a large portion of these problems because you know, then the workers would not be reliant wholly on tips for their wages. I mean, I just, you know, what other industry in America relies on customers to pay its workers' wages for it? You know, there is none other that is this large and this kind of blatantly reliant on customers and unwilling to pay its own workers' wages.
In many European countries, the tip is included in the cost of the meal. In some countries like Germany, the waiters are paid full wage because it's just considered part of their income.
That's right. I mean, in most of Europe, in most of the world, restaurant workers do earn a base wage and the tip is on top of the wage. Only in America, and it's because of the power of the National Restaurant Association, and frankly, actually, due to Herman Cain. When Herman Cain was the head of the National Restaurant Association back in 1996, he struck a deal with Congress saying that they, the NRA, the National Restaurant Association, would not oppose the overall minimum wage continuing to rise as long as the minimum wage for tipped workers stayed frozen forever. Not because, you know, these workers make, you know, tons of money in tips. The data shows that they don't. You know, their median wage is under $9 an hour. They're making poverty wages simply because this industry refuses to pay its own workers' wages and expects us, the customers, to do so. And speaking of other countries, unfortunately, the National Restaurant Association has formed something called the Multinational Restaurant and Hospitality Association and has been attempting to influence other nations' governments to reduce their workers' wages to a tipped minimum wage the way we have in this country, which is just an outrage. Like I said, I think most, you know, I've been traveling around the country, I think most people in America agree that workers deserve some base wage that they can rely on. You know, tips fluctuate, and your rent doesn't fluctuate, bills don't fluctuate, but tips definitely do, and so these workers should have a base wage that they can rely on.
Well, whenever this comes up for debate, the restaurant owners, including some pretty important ones, say that this could put them out of business. And if they had to pay for sick days and health benefits, that would really cause them a lot of trouble.
Right. And that's just empirically not proven to be true. So there are 7 states in the United States that pay the same wage to tipped workers and non-tipped workers. They include California, Oregon, Washington. California actually has the largest and fastest growing restaurant industry in the country. They're doing quite well, despite the fact that tipped workers are paid actually $8 across the board. And so empirically, it hasn't proven to be true that raising wages or providing paid sick days, you know, results in job loss. And on the other hand, actually, there are plenty of employers that not only do provide higher wages and paid sick days and benefits and make a profit, not in spite of, but because they treat their workers well. But actually, we've brought them together to form a new alternative national restaurant association called RAISE, Restaurants Advancing Industry Standards and Employment. These employers announced last week that they were forming an alternative to the National Restaurant Association, a new restaurant association that represents employers that think differently, that feel differently, that know that treating their workers well, providing a livable wage and paid sick days is actually beneficial to the bottom line. And we have about 100 of these employers around the country that are doing really well for themselves and have proven that regardless of their size, regardless of their structure, you can actually treat your workers well and because of that, be very profitable.
My guest is Saru Jayaraman. Her book, Behind the Kitchen Door. Well, you said that many of the workers are undocumented, and you also write in this book that there is a racial component to restaurant work. You write that there's a kind of a caste system with the lighter-skinned workers in the front, darker-skinned workers in back. Why do you think that restaurants are so loath to have non-white workers as waiters?
You know, I think it's easier. So we conducted a study a few years ago and sent 200 pairs of white and people of color applicants into fine dining restaurants to see who would get hired. And we found that white workers had twice the chance of the workers of color, even when the workers of color had obviously spoke perfect English, had better resumes than the white workers. There's an assumption by the industry that customers prefer a certain look, a certain table talk. They might think it's easier to have these folks as waiters, when in fact, the employers that promote from within, that allow workers of color to move up the ladder, they find that they do so much better because those workers actually know the menu, know service, know the restaurant. They've been with the restaurant for years and years and years. They're not an actor or a student coming from elsewhere who are in the industry transitionally. They're somebody who've really dedicated their lives to this career, not as a profession, not as a job, but as a profession. People take great pride in restaurant work. And so when they're allowed to advance to wait staff and bartending positions, where in a city like New York they can make more money and tips, they find that actually these workers turn out to be better servers, turn out to be great servers, in fact, and that customers really enjoy them and you know, come back. So I think over time, you know, restaurants that are part of, you know, the High Road, part of RAISE, part of this Alternative Restaurant Association that we've created, who are promoting from within, who do recognize the value of diversity and internal promotions practices, over time, I think more and more customers will gravitate because they'll see better service, better food, better service from workers who've stayed with a restaurant over a long period of time and managed to move up a ladder, as opposed to a restaurant that continually, and unfortunately, this is a lot of New York and a lot of America. If you go into any fine dining restaurant, you're going to find, you know, mostly white servers and bartenders, mostly workers of color as bussers, dishwashers, workers in the back. Those restaurants that don't allow those workers to move up the ladder to wait staff and bartending positions aren't creating a real pathway for those workers. Over time, are going to find that their wait staff actually, you know, is more transitional. They have to deal with more turnover, you know, isn't as invested in kind of selling and the success of the restaurant. I think over time we're going to find those restaurants that do promote from within are more successful. As we have a more diverse customer base increasingly, but I think those restaurants that cater to that are going to do better.
But Saru, you are co-founder with someone or people from the former Windows in the World, just the restaurant that was destroyed on 9/11, and they created their own restaurant, which has struggled, despite the fact that it's operated on a very democratic basis. Why has it struggled?
I think every restaurant struggles. I don't think there is a restaurant in America that hasn't struggled, and we are certainly very sympathetic to that. That's why we've been working with these small business restaurant owners across the country who are doing well and doing well by doing right. And so we've struggled as well.
You've come under scrutiny from Daryl Issey, a Republican from California, your own state. Why is the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform looking into your organization?
Because they don't like change. I mean, the truth is that when large corporations have been dominating this sphere for so long and have managed to keep the wages at $2.13 an hour and $7.25 for as long as they have managed to make these closed-door deals, they don't like to be exposed. They don't like to be for things to change. They don't like to have to pay higher wages, even actually if those higher wages would, in the long run, reduce their own turnover, increase productivity, increase profitability. So we realize we're going to have pushback. We're going to be investigated. There are going to be attacks, and we welcome that. We welcome that because that is the pathway to change. That is the only way we're going to be able to change the industry, is by shaking it up a little bit and showing it that, look, this is a win-win situation in the end. In the end, you will do better, just as we will, just as workers will. You will do better when your workers are paid a decent wage, aren't too poor or too sick to come to work, you know, can't afford to take care of themselves and their children.
Saru, we've run out of time, Saru, unfortunately. Saru Jayaraman, her book, Behind the Kitchen Door, published by ILR Press, which is an imprint of Cornell University Press.